Okay, welcome everyone. Shmuel Beis, chapter 6. And we talked about how David's first act was to set up the Yerushalayim as a way to unify everybody. In other words, he didn't want to rule as the king of one tribe, or his tribe of Yehuda, but he wanted to rule as the entire Jewish people, to bring unity to everyone. And so therefore, he set up the city that Shmuel Hanavi had told him about, which the Torah predicts that there will be this city that will be the one place that eventually would be there, and that's Yerushalayim. Now, Yerushalayim, though, as the very first act as a city, in order to what kind of city it will be, what's the focal point? So the obvious focal point would be the Aron, Hashem. So his very first act will be, now that the Yerushalayim was conquered, to bring the Aron up to the city of Yerushalayim. And this would set the tone for the whole kingdom. In other words, just like Kinitzion, Tete, Sora, Devar Hashem, Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim would be the place where the Devar Hashem came from. In other words, that's where that would be the source of everything. So, we begin here. Just mentioned also in last week's chapter just that the Plishtim always, whenever they sensed we were getting strong, they would attack. And this is sometimes there's idea that good things sometimes come with challenges. In other words, here we want conquer Yerushalayim, and then next thing you know, the Plishtim are there. And there's idea sometimes that the way of this world is that what makes good things special is that they don't come easy. You try to do a good deed, and sometimes you get rewarded for it in a way that you didn't necessarily want. Sometimes that's what makes good deeds special, is that they don't come easy. There are challenges when you try to do something good. It doesn't always come easy. And so the Plishtim, in this sense, they tried to take advantage of our unity and our capital city, and they attacked, and David was successful in defeating them. Okay, so that was kind of the last thing in chapter 5. And now we read about the next thing. Now, there's I saw one of the commentaries pointed out, and if you're going to ask me this each time, I'm going to have a hard time answering it. Sometimes it refers to him as David, and sometimes it refers to him as David HaMelech. In other words, sometimes it refers to him as privately as David, who he was, and then other times it refers to him as King David. And so why does it sometimes go one way and some... So the obvious answer is that when he did something as a king, as like a royal decree, then it would say King David, the king orders. And when he does something as his David, as David's personality, then you would say David. So it's interesting, like in the beginning of chapter 5, where it says that the tribes came to him, they came to him as David. They said, David, you're our buddy, right? They said, David, you're our flesh and blood. That's who they came to him as David personally. Not just because he was the king or the one. He was David. The only thing is, we will have to challenge ourselves whenever we see that to why. The first one is the beginning of this chapter, because it starts off, Yosef o David as called Bocho Yisrael. The David got together. Now, some people suggest this was not really a draft, but it was a celebration. Now it's time to bring the Aron. It was like one of the most joyous occasions is when you bring a new Torah to a synagogue. You have a celebration. In New York, they have a truck that you can rent that has a Torah truck, that has... they make like a parade, and they have a band, and they block off the street, and you bring the Torah. It's very joyous kind of... and the kids, they all carry... I think in Israel, they carry torches, I think. And they or sparklers or something. It's like a whole... The beautiful people that have been part of it have really been moved. It's just this feeling of bringing the Torah in, completing a Torah and bringing it to its place and surround... It's just the whole... It's a very special occasion. So this was not so much a draft by the king that the king commanded everybody have to come up, but it was David HaMelech as a person telling people... David is the one that celebrates. He's the one that is joyous with the Torah, as we'll see later. You know, the way he dances with the Torah, and the, that was so he called the youth, the young lads. They all came up, 30,000 of them. So v'yakam v'yelak David, verse 2, v'kolam ashitim v'alei Yehuda lalos misham es aron elokim. So David and all the people, they all came to move the aron. Ashenikra shem. Shame, Hashem Svakos Yosef Kruvim Alav. It had the... Now, there's... with the Aron, there are different names for the Aron. There were different Aronas. But this was the Aron Hashem. And we talked about the name Svakos, which means they usually translate as the Hashem of the legions. But it's the idea is that Hashem is very multifaceted. That Hashem is the... If you ever look upon the army of the tens of thousands of people and the idea that Hashem is the power over the hundreds and thousands and millions, we use that word Svakos. So the
now, were there two Arons or just one?
Different opinions, yeah. Different opinions. There was the Aron, but then there was an Aron that went out. Could be there was a portable one that went out to war, you know. In other words, they had the fixed Aron, and then there could be they had one that the soldiers took with them, like a travel Aron, you know. That
was not clear.
That's not clear. The different opinions have been shown, and it's a whole discussion. Some people say each tribe had their own Aron, you know, like this. So anyway, and this was the Aron that the Kruvim had. Kruvim are very, they call them cherubs. Whenever we get into the mystical, we don't know so much what it is. They were children's, two little children's, children on the Aron. The idea of the purity of the Aron, or the Torah is secured by the children of the, you know, if you make the children, if you raise them up to Torah, then there'll be an Aron, there'll be a future. These were the, and they're described with like wing like they're the angels, and that's where they get the idea, angels have the wings, or the, but they stood on top of the Aron.
Here it says, the name of the Lord of hosts that sitteth upon the Kruvim. I don't remember anything.
Well, you have the Aron, and then you have the cherubs, and then I guess you have the Shekhinah, you have the divine presence that rests on that. Yeah.
Okay, I have never heard that before.
Oh, that expression in that
right.
Way. Yeah, well, he rests everywhere, but specifically it's felt in a very intense way in that place. That's the. There's an interesting tradition that when we were doing the way we were supposed to, the cherubs were like almost hugging each other. But when we were not, they like turned away from each other. It's like a.
There's a confusion in my mind about. It says, I believe it says in the Chumash that the children, the cherubs, were facing the ark and facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I always kind of. Adjusted it that way, but then I saw a series of a video with the two children just facing squarely at each other and not at an angle at all, and I was wondering if it was the correct opinion.
There's discussion about it. It could be, like I said, that when we were doing the will of Hashem, they were close or affectionate towards each other, but then when we were not doing the will of Hashem, they were turned away. The Medrash says that when the Gentiles destroyed the temple and they came in and they saw the cherubs were like hugging each other. And the deeper meaning of that is that Hashem was punishing us out of love. And that was the... But they said, oh, you know, the Jews would always lecture the Gentiles about men and women hugging in public. And so they came into the ark and they said, look what they got here. You know, here are these Jews that are so puritanical and against our idols and against our adultery and against all the orgies that go on by our thing. And here we walk in the Holy of Holies. They have a man and a woman. And they didn't realize that they symbols the, you know, the Shekhinah that we're married to Hashem and that we're embraced by Hashem's presence and the whole, but it's a mystical thing. It's a subject for study, exactly what the cherubs were, how they worked, what the, I know that's my excuse. Whenever I don't want to go into something, I tell you but it is, there are really certain things that are, could be, you know, dealt with in depth and in length, are worthy of a study of itself, you know, a 6-part series on the cherubs or in the Kruvim. Okay, verse 3. Now, this was a mistake. It's very, very interesting. You know, a lot of people don't like our current way of style of writing. When we write about our heroes, the great great rabbis and rebbetzins and people that lived, so we make them sound like they were born a tzaddik. You know, they were born and they memorized the Torah and they prayed all day and they did righteous deeds and that they were just like, you know, like they were born like that they never made any mistakes. They were always righteous and life came easy. And the reality is that's not how it really happens. People, if they become righteous, they have a lot of ups and downs till they get there. And the biggest proof is somebody like King David. But it's really all, if you look at Moshe Rabbeinu, he made his mistakes, he hit the rock, everybody. And the problem is that when we look at people, our role models, and we assume that everything went easy for them, they had no struggles, they had no ups and downs, so we say that has nothing to do with us, because we're human. we don't strive for greatness because we assume that there's these superhuman people that are born angels that have it easy, and then there's the rest of us. But we don't realize that really that every one of us can strive for greatness and can be those people. It's just we don't really know the whole story. So why don't we know the whole story? Some of it is that the books are not usually written by those great people themselves. Because great people don't like to toot their own horn, and they never consider themselves great. So they didn't write books. And the people that wrote those books about them didn't want to speak Lashon Hara. So they don't want to tell you the leading rabbi in Europe as a child brought a goat into his classroom and hid it in the closet. And he was a troublemaker. And so Rabbi Weiss says he has a theory that a lot of the leading rabbis were troublemakers as kids or whatever. Why? Because they were probably bored out of their minds from class because they were brilliant and they had to. But somehow, if you didn't know that, you'd assume that in class. I grew up, I wasn't in the most strictly religious home growing up. And I imagine, when I grew up, you left your yarmulke in synagogue. You took it off and you put it in the box on your way out. And so I kind of imagined if you wore your yarmulke outside of synagogue, that meant that you folded your hands and you listened and you were nice and, you know, it just because you were goody-goody. That if you wore a yarmulke, that's like you were like super religious. So when I first went to day school, I couldn't believe it. Like, these kids were religious, and they were acting up, and they were just had the same, you know, I just thought, well, they're supposed to sit there with their hands folded and be like, you know, because I just didn't realize. I thought it like an angel would wear a yarmulke outside a synagogue, like not a regular person or the, and it's just a frame of reference. So sometimes we don't realize that great people make mistakes, and now we're going to talk about David making a mistake. And so it's just, you know, we make mistakes, don't make mistakes. And the Gemara even says that this is a mistake a school child could have made, and that was about how to transport the Aron. Now, you need to know why he made the mistake. One of the things you see about David is after he makes a mistake, he tries again. And that's one of the messages of Tehillim. It mentions that idea that a righteous person falls 7 times, but he always gets up. You never give up. That's the part of life is to, you know, you make a mistake, you keep on going, and that's it. So what did he do? The question was how to transport the Aron. What's the ideal way to transport the Aron? Now, the Aron had to be transported to Yerushalayim, and what do you do with it? So he puts it on a wagon. And he does a brand new wagon. That's very respectful to create a brand new wagon for. I mean, that's the Lexus of its time, I suppose. You know, the wagon, you know, a Cadillac wagon. It was a nice wagon, and they carried it from Minotav Asher Vigiv. Now, the Torah has described the Levites carrying the Aron, and here he puts it on the wagon. Again, most of the rabbis see this was the beginning of the mistake. Why would he do it that way? The Plishtim, when they returned the Aron, they put it on a wagon. So it could be that he was influenced by the Philistine way of doing things. In other words, there are other ways that we, you know, in the funeral service also, you know, like we lower the body in and we pay our respects personally. We believe that it's the personal attention of carrying it yourself and doing it yourself rather than just having it up on a wagon pulled by animals or whatever. There's something about doing it in person and holding it in person. In fact, there's a big debate about the Torah after it's rolled up when you have two Torahs. if you should hold it, or you can put it in a Torah holder. So I don't know what happened here, because here we never used to have a Torah holder, but now they do have one. But some synagogues don't allow it because they feel that it's not appropriate to, like, just leave it in a holder, but it should be held in person. And there's a discussion also, if you transport a Torah, can you put it in the mail, or should a person carry it on an airplane? Is it okay to put it in your luggage? What's the what's showing the proper attention for transporting a Torah? So I'm not telling anybody what the halacha is, or there are different scenarios where it's, you know, what's more proper, and different ways to show respect. But apparently David made a mistake. On some level, he should have understood that it should be done by hand or by shoulder, or just somehow putting it on the wagon and being pulled by the cow. That just was too impersonal. It didn't show the love or the attention, or it didn't follow the rule. Now, perhaps David felt that this was different than the tabernacle. This was different than in the desert. But it's not clear what the logic of the mistake was. We just know there was a mistake.
Is this a Haftorah?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out why
the Haftorah Shmini, it says.
It's so familiar.
Okay, yeah, it is a Haftorah Shmini. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Since we don't have the temple yet, it's not built yet, so what were the Levites doing? How did he know?
Good. I didn't even mention that. He doesn't mention that he used the Levites necessarily. They don't seem to play a big role yet.
Right.
Perhaps he should have brought the Levites in, or should have had some of the commentators say that was the mistake or the issue. Because we'll have to compare this to what he does the second time around when he tries to fix it. We might see, again, this is the fun of when the Torah doesn't go into detail what the mistake is, so you can guess, or you can try to figure out what it is, but you can never be totally. So it's like when it talks about Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock. There's about at least 10 different views about what the mistake was. And if the mistake, some people said he was supposed to talk to it. Some people said he was okay in hitting it, but he hit it twice. Some people say he hit it twice and he called the people rebellious. Some people say he was okay in hitting it, he was okay in calling them rebellious, but he should have sang a song of thanks afterwards. There's just different views about what he did wrong. So on the one hand, if the Torah didn't say what he did wrong, that's proof that it's not so simple that what he did wrong, because the Torah didn't even spell it out in black and white. On the other hand, we have the right to look at it and guess and say, well, I think maybe, you know, where the Levium, what, why didn't they carry it on the shoulder? Did they get this from the Goyim? Like, what was the mistake? But it's that's part of the challenge of studying Tanakh, is trying to figure out what went wrong. Yeah.
Do you think that David might have been thinking of the tribe leaders offering that they brought on the wagon?
On the wagon? Could be. Mm-hmm. And an inaugural election.
What is the Hebrew word being used here for the word wagon?
Agala? It's drawn by a cow, drawn by the eagle, by a cow. That could also be, in other words, the fact that it's drawn by animals. Like they used to, in Europe, when they had a very big righteous person who'd come, they would unleash the horses, and then the people would pull the wagon the last few feet to the synagogue, or to kind of show that they didn't want it pulled by animals, it should be pulled by...
So the point is, I think my understanding is like a caisson, which would be similar to a wagon, is what takes... The deceased, carries the deceased.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if perhaps maybe a wagon or something would have been used at that time to carry something that not necessarily living in the way that it's meant here versus something that's dead. And here we have a living Torah. So that...
In other words, maybe for a living, you know, you carry inanimate things in one way and you carry something that's a source of life in another way,
way was it carried when Joshua took it into Israel?
So then the people carried it, the Levites carried it by hand. If you remember, they talked about the Aaron, went over this, when the sea split, and it kind of carried the people over. And they say there that we have a tradition that it didn't weigh anything, that instead of them having to carry the Aaron, they actually leaned on it carried them. And there's the idea that we think that you know, that we're doing the Torah a favor by learning it. It does us a favor, and that it gives us the, it carries us. That's the, but again, they all talk about it. They try to figure this out. And so where they carried it from, it was the house of a person named Aminadab, Asher Begiva, Uzza v'Achiv, and these were some of the leaders, a great man named Uzza and his brothers, and Bnei Anyadab, Noagim, and they were leading it. They were there, and they went in front of the Aron. The David called Israel. Now, some people don't like the word used here, Misachakim, Lifnei Hashem. They were celebrating. Now, I'll just to get ahead, the second time around, they don't use this word. They say that he danced in joy, but it doesn't use the word Misachakim. Some people use this word for the word jest, Mitzakek, like to jest. And they suggest that it was a little bit too, the celebration wasn't in the right way. It was a little bit too laughing or too. Now, the second thing that's very interesting is, I was debating, do I see if you catch it or do I tell you, right? It said they used music. And they had music. It was like, first of all, it says that David were misakakim, were sometimes scoffing or laughing. B'kol atzeb roshim, b'kinos, b'nevom, b'tufim, b'nevom, and they were really, they had a real band. They had a real shebang going on there. If you just skip down a little bit to where they brought it up the second time, it doesn't say, it's verse 15. Here they bring it up, Betrua, Bekol Shofar, and they're blowing a shofar, but they're not, and they're dancing, but it's not the same. It's a different service the second time around. And we'll see also they did offerings, they didn't do that. But right now we're still in the first time where they made the mistake, but it's just interesting that it kind of mentions the music and the, they got caught up in the music, or it's not so clear. Okay. Now, Uzza was one of the spectators, and he was traveling close up with Aaron, and he went to reach for the Aaron, the exibo, and he grabbed it. He shoved to a bucker. He thought that the Aaron was going to slip, and he went to grab the Aaron, and the Yichar Af Hashem Uzza, Hashem got angry with him, the Yake Shem, Elokim Alashal. And Hashem struck him down, and he died there, Imaron Elokim. Did this spoil the party. I mean, there are certain things that can happen. You know, if a person's ever been in a spoiled party where everything's going fine, you know, if you ever watch the politicians when they think they're winning, and then all of a sudden they get the news they lose, and it's like they're at the headquarters, and then it's like the mood, like, just totally, like, you can imagine here, this was the most joyous occasion. We finally have our capital, and we have our king. And the moment we've all been waiting for, where the Aaron is being brought up to Hashem's house, and all the bands are playing. And then all of a sudden, somebody gets killed, and right by the Aaron. So what happens here? David is angry. He's upset. David's really upset. This ruined his party. This was like a terrible sign. And they named the place Peretz Uzza Ada Yom Hazeh to remember what had happened. So what did Uzza do wrong? So some people say that he grabbed it with his hands. There's the idea when you hold the Torah that you're supposed to hold it with like a talus. You don't grab it with your bare hands. You're not supposed to, like, you're supposed to have a reverence for it. You'll notice when the men, if they get called up to Torah, they take like something to kiss the Torah. They're really not supposed to like hold it with their bare hands. Some people say that was the mistake. Other people say that sometimes you have the hero that a person thinks the world needs them. You know, I'm not going to be here. The world's not going to. So he thought, you know, he was going to show everybody how he was saving the Torah. Excuse me, the Torah can manage quite fine by itself. In other words, maybe he somehow thought the Aaron needed him. Just that line of thinking that the Aaron Hashem could fall, he was lacking a certain faith, this fellow Uzza. Now, David didn't see this as just Uzza's sin. He saw this as there was a mistake amongst the Jewish people. There was something that was wrong, and definitely if somebody's killed, this really takes the joy out of the party. There's no question this took this ruined the occasion, so to speak. And it's interesting, like I said, we don't always know what David's feelings were, but over here it says that David was upset. Vayichar, he was upset. Verse 9, and he said, David was afraid, like, you know, he realized that this was a complicated thing. He thought this was easy, and he realized, this is one of the things, later on when they set up the temple, there were a lot of safeguards, there were a lot of rules, there were a lot of, the temple service had very specific ways in which it had to be done. And so, perhaps in their joy, they just kind of ignored some of the rules, and so right away they had a wake-up call that, you know, the Aaron Hashem, you got to be very, you can be joyous, you can be happy, but there's certain, you know, it's got to be done right.
It's just like the inauguration of the tabernacle,
mm-hmm. Aaron. Oh, good, good, good. They make that connection. Some people say that there's a concept of love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, and we always need both. And if you have one without the other, you're in trouble. If you only fear Hashem, and there was a sect, the Essens, whatever, that in the end they became celibate, and they stood in the mountain till they lived in the desert, and they ate, you know, water, you know, bread and water, and they only had the fear of Hashem, and they didn't have the love of Hashem, they didn't have the joy in Hashem. They ate cold food on Shabbos, and then you have people that are all love but no fear. You know, Hashem is love, Hashem is this, and there's no fear of Hashem. It's always the combination, the right combination. So there is an idea that we did have that by the death of Nadab and Avihu. There, that you know, that there was the mood wasn't sober enough, so to speak, or the, it's not that we understand it. We don't fully understand why there needs to be both, you know. But there is this concept of Hashem being the justice, that we have to, as much as we love Hashem and we fear, we have to have a sense of awe as well. 10. Below Abba Davila Sari Love. So David, this is dangerous stuff here. He didn't want to bring the Aaron until we first figured out what the mistake was. You don't keep on rushing through with this until, otherwise there could be more casualties. So, Yeter David Beis Ovid. So David decided that they would leave the Aaron temporarily where it was. And they left it at a person's house whose name was Ovid Edom. Now, it sounds like he's not Jewish, actually, because he calls him Edom Agiti, but he was one of the Levian.
Agiti, one of the nations that they were supposed to drive out?
People took on the name of the place where they were from. So if you, the Gath, you know, Giti was from the word Gath. Gath was a Philistine city. So it means that he might have been born there or lived there, or that he was called the Giti, you know, from Gath.
The rebels from, like, Europe.
Mm-hmm, that's right, Satmar or whatever it sounds very funny. There's a rabbi in Israel, the Boston rabbi, because he's from Boston, the Pittsburgher, and Europe is also like these funny Polish cities that are little holes in the walls. They have a famous Hasidic because the original rabbi started out from those places, and today nobody knows these little Polish cities, but everybody knows, you know, Lubavitch or Bava or Square or all these little cities. The funny one that he mentioned is that the Satmar Hasidim is named after, the city was called Satmir, St. Mary.
Uh-huh.
Which is named after somebody who was not one of our, you know, well, she was okay. It was her son that was the troublemaker, the Mary. But it's just, you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know the history of that little town. But at any rate, so David decided to leave the Aaron there. Yeshivar Nasham Bezo Dagitia. So he left it there 3 months. Now, interesting thing happened. By Evorach Hashem is Ovid Edom Veskol Bezo. There was a special blessing that came upon that house. There's a discussion in the Gemara what happened. Many people say that they had multiple births in that house. Every daughter-in-law got pregnant, and every woman, and they had lots of children born. It was like a special, unusual blessing from Hashem that took place. And, you know, the crops grew, everything, it was clear. There was the idea that, you know, it's considered a big merit if a person is ever able to host, like, a big Torah scholar. It's like, because you have the Aaron Hashem in your house. And so you'll be blessed if you can be the host for a Torah scholar or for a Torah or for Torah study. Like if we ever, someone ever gets the call, you know, we want to have a lunch and learn or we want to have a class in your house. So nobody likes to have people in the house. They have to have everything clean and they feel funny. But the idea is that it's a merit to have your house a place where the Torah rests. So if you ever get that call, you know, I say that, I don't know that we always have a class in our house or whatever, but it, the idea, though, that your house gets blessed for being a place of the Torah, that comes from over here. It says Hashem blessed his house for being the place where the Torah would could temporarily reside. But you got the Melech. Now, David had his people told him, Lema, Baruch Hashem, is based over there. Now, David was afraid that Hashem was angry about the Aron, or maybe it wasn't supposed to go in Yerushalayim, but when he saw that they were blessed, so then he saw that as a good sign, that the Aron was a source of blessing. And Beskol Asher, he thought maybe the Aron was, there was something wrong with the Aron, maybe, with it to kill people, and now he sees the opposite. So it becomes very clear that it depended on how the Aron was treated. If the Aron was treated right, it was a source of blessing. If it was disrespectful, then it was a source of danger. So that message David gets. So now David realizes that he's going to try again. So again, that's the message I take from David. If you don't succeed, just try again. You know, so he tries again, and he brings the Aron up this time, and he does it with joy. That's the way we serve Hashem, with joy. He said, now, this time he does it, he also brings the offerings as he's doing it. He could set a nose to Aaron, and they carry the ark. It doesn't say they put it on the wagon like they did before. This time they carry it by hand, and every six steps, Yizbak, Shor, Maria, they bring offerings, they show gratitude to Hashem. Now, here is a very interesting thing. David didn't do this before, but David is really... it could be that David saw that this time Hashem was allowing him to do what he couldn't do before. And sometimes a person makes a mistake and he does it over, and a person should be very happy that they get it, you know, the second time. If you get the opportunity to do something, and you can fix it, or you can do it, so that's a sign of joy. Now I can do it. You know, even though the first time I didn't succeed, now I'm succeeding. That's terrific. And so David had an unusual happiness here. And he says that he did it with all of his strength. He danced like he put all of himself into dancing. And there is an idea, by the way, that dancing is a way of serving Hashem. That's why, let's say, sometimes when we dance at a wedding, or we dance at Simchas Torah, or we dance just out of joy, that's a form of divine service. And so David over here is dancing in front of Hashem. It was a holy thing. And he was wearing the garments, a special kind of belt, or special garments that were reserved for worship. The David called Beit Yisrael, Malam Esar, and they brought the Aron Betruah. By the way, the word Truah usually comes from the word like broken, or crying. So we have that's the same word of the shofar. Dun, 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 the crying of the shofar, the kol shofar. So you have the joy and the, my understanding was, again, that you need these two things. You need the joy together with the awe. That's always the perfect combination. And by the way, with parents also, we always talk about you're supposed to love them and fear them, right? In other words, it's supposed to be that perfect combination of, you know, both, and one without the other is just not the way it's meant to be. So this time he brings it up with joy, but there is that sense of awe as well. And so this time it works. The Aron goes up, and they're very happy. Now, everything is good. Again, this is just very interesting. Sometimes the lesson of Tanakh is just the human side of it, that we have to be able to see ourselves and our own conditions and our own gut. So everything is great, except David's wife is giving him a hard time, right? What's the problem? Now they're bringing the Aron. Michal Bashol, and David's wife Michal, Nishka, she's looking out there. She's staring. It's a funny expression. She's looking out the window. Could be, why is she behind the window? Why isn't she there? She's ashamed of him. She didn't want to be, well, whatever. But Teresa Melech, now here it says she sees, she didn't have a problem with David dancing, but she has a problem with Teresa HaMelech David, King David. A king is dancing like that? My father would never do that. They say that every woman compares her husband to her father, right? The major man in her life, like there's a certain psychology like that says that. So Michal, David's wife, looks out the window, and she sees David dancing with all of his strength in Makarot Ibn Hashem, Matibas Lo Belibo, and she doesn't like it. Shaul was very modest. Shaul was known for being very modest. We had that one instance that to go to the bathroom, he went in the cave. Now, the cave was out of the way, and it was not a... But he was unusually modest and you know, kept himself very reserved and very covered and very... Now, here, David is dancing, and David wasn't... he wasn't wearing his royal robes. He was wearing the... The priestly garments didn't cover people that much. In fact, it talks about when the Kohanim, they didn't walk with steps because then they reveal their nakedness, so they had to walk up the ramp. And so David is wearing, like, you know, he's dancing. And when you dance, you make body motions, and it's very revealing. It's one of the reasons that, you know, just she felt that it wasn't becoming of a king to dance like that.
Just a quick question on the priest. Mm-hmm. Was it considered like an extra baguette if they were to wear underwear? The priest?
Yeah, they only had certain. Their pants were tight, but it wasn't.
So they couldn't wear like their garment just for regular.
When they went in the temple, they had set garments. They weren't. I don't think they were allowed to add to it.
Okay.
So so she sees David. She's staring at him out the window, and she's in her heart. She doesn't say it. I mean, but in her heart, she feels that he's misbehaving himself. That he's. He's overdoing it. He's not acting becoming of a king. So, and again, this is David's happy day, and then sometimes everything is right, and you run into somebody who's not happy with you. You know, and it's just, let's see what happens. Yabanes Arna Shambi Yisimah Makom Basoka. Oh, they brought it to the tent that David had planted specially in that place. The Yal David and David brought sacrifices and peace offerings and everything. This is a terrific day. This was the special day where the Torah finally, after, you know, we were in the land for over 100 years, and the Torah wandered, and then it was captured by the Plishtim, and now we finally are at Yerushalayim. The tribes are finally united, and we finally have the pious king and the right king, and we finally bring the Aron to its place. V'yachal David me'alos olo ushlamim. And David finishes, and he blesses all the people. Verse Am b'shem Hashem, and in the name of Hashem of Legion, he blesses them. Now it's interesting. It doesn't sound like she participated, like she was behind the window. But this, all the men and women were there. David blesses the men and the women. He gives them loaves, and each one got a piece, and they got a loaf of bread and some of the beef, and they also had wine. And everybody went, this was really a good celebration. In other words, from beginning to end, everybody had a good time. Everybody went home. Everybody got a piece. Everybody, this was a service. This was, everybody felt the holiness of the moment. Mm-hmm. Except for Michal. That's right.
In the previous paragraph, when it says every six steps, how long a distance was he going?
Was it? I don't know. Don't know exactly. But it was.
I mean, from where to where? Did he do it?
It was quite a bit of offerings. Let's put it that way. It would have been quite a bit.
Was it? Oh, it must have been from Obed's house.
Right, but just like the outskirts of Yerushalayim, not that far. So after David finished with the people, so then he went to his house. In other words, that's, you go back to your family. Now David goes to Bench's house. And some people say that Michal, her mistake was that she was so anxious to give it to him that she left the house because she couldn't wait for him to come home. Now, there was, before he even got home, she went out to give him a piece of her mind. Now, she's a righteous lady, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's just, again, there's a difference of opinion over here. But she felt that he had didn't act properly. And it's, you see from here that a wife, even if your husband is the king, sometimes the king needs to be put in his place, right? I mean, he needs to be told what's right and what's wrong. So she felt that it was her job to tell David where he went wrong. Again, maybe she was too, she should have not have jumped out of the house to do it. Like, she could have waited till he got home and relaxed. And, you know, this was his big moment. I mean, David's whole life he had challenges, and he's finally ready to, you know, had a good time, everything went well, and this time nobody was killed. He gets home, and he's ready to relax, and then his wife gives it to him, right? Now, here it tells us who her father was. We know who her father was. We didn't forget that. But the answer is that she talks to him now as the son of her father. This was the, there was a certain rivalry between, you know, the Shuls and she, Likras David, and she doesn't even say she goes to greet the king, she goes to greet David. I want to have a talk with you. But Tamar, she says like this. Now, even you could question whether she meant it sarcastically or she was trying to say it in a respectful way. She says the following. We're in verse 20. Ma nikvad, she says, oh, what an honor today, the king of Israel, asher nigla hayom leinei imahu savadav, that all the maidservants told me how you were, you know, they saw you do those really good moves up there. you look like you were on the top 10, you were dancing like one of the drunk ones, or one of the really, you know, you were really dancing, David. So, David, so she clearly was trying to say that she felt that he wasn't acting in a way befitting of a king. That's what she says. The Yamar David al Michal, and David says to Michal, David says a very strong word, Lifnei Hashem. David says, and keep in mind, for David, this was his service. He was dancing. He was serving Hashem. It was a form of prayer for him to dance. And he says, you're wrong. You're saying that I was doing this in front of the crowd. No, Lifnei Hashem. This was in front of God. And it's true, you had one way of looking at it, and I have a way of looking at it, but guess who God picked? In other words, you have your father's way of serving God, and there's my way of serving God. Asher bocha bi me'avicha, God chose me over your father. You're judging me with your father's way of looking at it, and God said that he chose me to be king. And not only that, he chose me over anyone in your father's house, Lenagid Alam Hashem, to be the leader. V'shechati, and I rejoiced in front of Hashem. So David said very strongly that David was this was part of his service. Minikleisi od mizos. Basically what he wants to say is, do you think it bothers me that I felt my honor? In other words, David didn't stand on honor over here. He said that I'm willing to be light and be low in my own eyes together with the common people. And you said with them, you know, that like you were concerned that the common people should see the king like rejoicing in this way. Like common, you don't see a king rejoice. You're not supposed to see a king really dancing. A king is supposed to be like separate from the people. Is supposed to, you know, they're not supposed to see a king in a moment of happiness and dancing and moving around and sweating and whatever. They're not supposed to see that. So David says, no, I felt that was my, I was happy to rejoice together with the people. There is an idea that the women were very into it in those days, because I keep on mentioning these maidservants. We had them earlier that they made up the song about David and his thousands and Shaul, and that they, you know, they were clapping. Or the Medrash seemed to say like she made fun of the mothers. The word imahos are like the mothers, the mothers who came with the little children to watch, and we'll see that Hashem punishes her. She's in her mind. It's like perhaps David, you know, he danced in front of, there were women watching, or there were other women watching, or she didn't feel it was proper. And David felt everybody can join in the service. Everybody was inspired by it. Everybody was part of it. And I don't feel, he didn't feel that by lowering himself to you know, like I said, there was no music, so maybe they were clapping or whatever it was. Maybe they, who knows how they participated, but in some way she felt that they were like the lowlifes. And David said, "No, I'm honored by that." Ulamicho bashol, and again, it doesn't say why. Our tradition is that this was a punishment from God that she didn't have any children with David ad yomoso until the day of her death. Now, the idea would be that she didn't see eye to eye with him, so how could they produce a family, you know, like they saw things differently. Or because she felt that these mothers was, like being a mother was something wrong, you know, was not dignified enough, and so therefore she didn't have a child. Now, there is a discussion, she had some children earlier, and so the question is, were those her children, or does it mean that she never had children, or she didn't have children from that point until she stopped having children until the day that she died? But it's one of the more interesting disputes. There's very little between husband and wife, you know, in Tanakh. There's no question that by marrying the daughter of Shaul, who was a different approach, Shaul was a different way of viewing things and was a different approach, that there could be this, you know, tension. If you marry someone who's from a different outlook and a different way of looking at things, then you're going to have this this challenge. But almost, it's just interesting, like you see in the discussion, how David looked at it, how she looked at it, and the it's one of the more famous discussions. There's a lot of room, again, in much of Tanakh, there's a lot of space for us to try to interpret or try to figure out. There's no definitive, you know, you could say exactly what the issue is. And it does appear that Hashem sides with David, because it seems like it's a punishment. It throws in that she never had a child. If you learn that they just didn't see eye to eye, you know, until... but then why would they have a child on the day that she dies? Like, you know, it's almost that they... And this, we learned earlier that when David wanted to start up the monarchy, there was one challenge. David was ready. They came to him, Abner came to him and said, "We're ready to make peace with you and make you the king over everything. Do you have any conditions?" So David said, "Yes, I must have my wife Michal back." So now, he was willing to give up the chance for unity amongst the tribes. The most important thing to him was to have Michal. Like, this was even after he had six other wives. But she, in some ways, and we mentioned that she had the nickname of Egla. She called her the young calf. She was very precious to him. So don't say that David fought with Michal. I mean, they had a very close relationship, but they did have this dispute about what's honor for the king. And again, that she got from the way her father's house looked at it, and David got it from the way his house looked at it. But we see the idea of the joy in the service, the joy in the dancing, and the dancing in front of Hashem, that was David's hallmark.